Thanks for joining us for this week's B-Side, our alternative take on some of the concepts that we have explored in our episodes doing our reviews in our book club. Now, when we talked about HeroQuest, one of the first things we highlighted was how strong of an introduction this is into the hobby of both roleplay and miniature gaming. And I think in terms of gateway experiences that you can have, short of being like walked through a tutorial RP campaign, this is as good as it gets.
As I said in the episode, one of my experiences in getting into role-playing games, I don't see them as directly connected, but it's certainly close, was playing the board game Dragonstrike. And in fact, Jay, I've known Jay for like a long time, and he and I and our other friend played this with that friend's brother, who is kind of the GM for that. And yeah, I don't know. It was it's an interesting experience. There's elements of that game that I think are solid. It does use more funky dice, like, you know, D8s and 12s and 10s. But otherwise, the experience is very similar to HeroQuest. It might be a little bit more bespoke is the right word. There's something about HeroQuest I think is to its advantage, which is how modular it is.
Yeah, Dragonstrike definitely felt more set with the adventures, not as, like, it doesn't feel like you can build with it as much as HeroQuest. I think the first couple times we played, Dragonstrike was a little off the cuff, and we didn't follow the rules as sharply.
Yeah.
But then we did a bit more improv with it, so it kind of...
Yeah, like, I think that's sort of where the notion of, like, a lot of the way that I understand role-playing games to work is more influenced by, I would say, two things. One was playing something like Dragonstrike, so like a board game, but the idea of improvising. And then just like early experiences of playing pretend.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Which like, so interestingly enough, like when I was growing up, I didn't really play RPG video games. And like they weren't, RPG video games of the time, I'm going to date myself here. RPG video games of the time were not exactly kid accessible.
Yeah.
Or you had to be a very patient child, which I am not, or wasn't, in any sense. But the upside to that is I wasn't influenced in the sense of like what a role-playing game is by way of video games. To me, they were very separate things. I don't know how it affected my development. I think I turned out relatively okay. You know, Jacob and I were playing like shooters like Doom, probably at the end of elementary school.
Yeah, Doom, Quake, Duke Nukem 3D, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not exactly age appropriate, but we didn't make the association, aside from, say, Doom and Wolfenstein being set in like a maze, essentially. I think that's about as close as we drew an association to what a role-playing game is. So that never really colored our thinking of it. As far as, I mean, Jacob, like when we played with our D&D group, that was more like thinking about D&D. It wasn't colored by video games as much?
Not as much. I mean, I think the closest thing for RPGs I played probably at the time may have been like the first Diablo or something, more of an action
sure,
feel.
Sure, yeah.
That brings me to a point. I remember playing the Diablo tie-in Wizards of the Coast D&D RPG with a friend. And that was, it was in the era of third edition.
Oh, right.
And we had a player's handbook, or he did, and we would go over that and not really ever play the game, but just kind of talk about like the weird possibilities that you could have.
Oh, sure.
You know, like, what if I was a character like this? Or what if we had a map that looked like that? And we never got far enough to ever implement any ideas. But the Diablo game had a simple enough adventure that I actually remember rolling dice as a barbarian.
Interesting. So did you actually try it out?
Yeah, we got so far as to play it.
Oh, cool.
And it was fun. It was a cool... It would be like, if I had to point to gateways, I would want to put something like HeroQuest or Warhammer Quest in front of it. But it was another really good introduction. I mean, my first role-playing was being the little kid at a table of older kids. And I was a halfling in AD&D campaign. So that was my first experience to role play back in grade school and elementary. And that was something that like I didn't understand. I didn't walk away from it knowing how the GM did anything, if that makes sense. It all felt like magic to me.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, yeah, there's some of that like childhood pretend I don't quite understand the rules, but they're telling me what I'm doing is okay, so I must be doing it.
Exactly. Like I just rolled when I was told to roll. I remember lots of little moments from the campaign, but that was my formal introduction. But it wasn't until that I got into games like Talisman that I was really wrapping my head around like what an RPG was. Another game I really enjoyed, this is again, like how many licenses ago was this? But this was the D20 Conan game of the early thousands.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Played a lot of that. And it was a really fun game. Had like a lot of depth to it. It was very much a 3.5 alike, but it was a really cool game. You know, if you know your Howard setting, it was cool. And that was another way to kind of get me in, because through a friend of mine, I had a lot of experience through Conan, especially through the Marvel comics.
Yeah.
And was it Dark Horse Comics at the time? I actually think it was Dark Horse.
It may have been Dark Horse. I mean, there is a Marvel licensed Conan comic, and that may have been, I think that's older actually.
So there was a lot of cross-referencing there, but that was big for me. But that was actually more of a regular, well, not regular per se, but more of a traditional D20 role-playing game, as opposed to when I was at my cousin's house as a young child, they had HeroQuest. It was just missing most of the components.
I've definitely been to a few people's houses where we dig out a box of HeroQuest from somebody's closet, and it'd be like mostly intact.
Might be missing a few pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like you got some bent doors or something like that. But yeah, I was just impressed by how much homebrew, like clearly this hit a chord with some people, you know, like as we were saying, like to us, if this had any effect on us, and by the time I played HeroQuest properly, we were well into the middle of playing Dungeons and Dragons 3.5. Maybe even 3. I think at the time it was just sort of like a novelty cooldown for our GM.
Yeah, something you'd play in between while your GM's just trying to, you know, come up with the next scenario.
Yeah, so. We had already gone through like a Pool of Radiance campaign. Oh, I don't remember specifically what the module was, but it was the 3.5 or third edition. No, it was third edition. Yeah, that's right. It was the third edition version of that.
Right.
And that's when 3.5 came out, and our DM was like trying to take on some of those things and figure out what we'd be doing next. So there was a lot of character conversions, and he just didn't have a campaign. We brought the game to a friend of ours' house and we played it. And I was like, yeah, this is fun. Like, it's very light beer and pretzels fun. But yeah, it was interesting kind of coming to that later. And again, I was having massive Dragonstrike flashbacks while at the same time seeing that HeroQuest is probably a better design game overall. But yeah, it's interesting to see, sorry, just to go back to the fact that to some people, this is like the game. I'm still sort of blown away. Like, to be fair, I am a connoisseur of obscure hobbies and subcultures. And so I'm not that surprised, but then I was like, oh, wow, these people are very committed. This is cool. Like, you know, people are like making their own, like not even their own custom furniture pieces with like actual molded texture and all that, because the pieces that came with the game are basically little cardboard boxes that you assemble, and they, I think, like say the bookcase has a little plastic top that holds it together, but like people are making like full-on sculpted, but as I said, not even just the furniture, but the board itself is made out of like tiles or like molded plastic, like in a way where I'm like, wow, like this is a work of art.
Yeah, they really hit this game hard.
This isn't just a board game. Like, I'd actually feel weird about playing on it. It would be fun, but it was like, wow, you really committed to making this thing, I don't want to say the right way, but this is the most crafted version of the game that I've seen. And yeah, there's like, I've seen that with some of the tiles in Warhammer Quest, where I found a blog where someone was recreating them as fully sculpted miniatures, essentially.
Well, with 3D printing, there's so much you can do. And if you are comfortable at making STLs, people could make digital recreations of the furniture, of the original models. Well, that's kind of... Oh, actually, I don't know how any of this is regarding like licenses and junk, but there's been really cool homebrew stuff that people have made. Like even something I've really liked is kind of like Necromunda style walls, but they're stone walls that you can put down on the board to give it like a three-dimensional depth quality, you know, or a height, I mean to say. So that's a really cool option. Even the hobby side of this has a lot of homebrew. And then that's not to mention all the online quests and campaigns that people have created that you can get online with and play.
Yeah, no, and like, yeah, there's tons of quests. Like, even when I was playing around with it in Tabletop Simulator, I started thinking about, like, my game designer brain kicked in, and I'm like, oh, like, is there a more, like, because, okay, the one thing that I've always seen as a sort of contentious thing is the roll to move. I wouldn't say that's the first thing to get thrown out, because some people are like, oh, you have to play with the roll to move, rules as written kind of thing. But there are ones where it's basically you just move the full extent of your movement, or less. But the version that I had made in Tabletop Simulator, I actually created a tile, which is like a line of sight tile. And I would put that basically where you couldn't see, like down a like around a corridor. And I would negate the move roll, because I felt it slowed the game down, except in combat where it made sense. So essentially you could move anywhere within your line of sight until something new happened.
I guess kind of like a focus of time. You're in exploration mode, so yeah. Your times per round is expanded, but in combat you're down to like seconds and
so there was essentially like a free move within the area that you know, and it just requires moving these little eye markers, which basically say, like, as soon as you turn this corner and you touch that eye marker, then I get to reveal, like, you have to stop and I have to reveal what's going on. So you almost think of it like a door, but it's more variable and contextual to as what you've actually seen. I mean, we should try it out. I'm curious to see what you guys think about how it speeds up the game. But I remember playing around with it, being like, yeah, this is improving the experience. It'd be a little hard to write that into a rule book for a game. So I could see that, like, just doing the roll to move thing is probably the easiest. But I found that as, we'll say, a mature gamer to be tedious as all hell.
It seems like homebrew is a great way for anyone with some bit of like a passion for design, just to kind of get them going in that direction. So, you know, you want to get into game design, learn how to homebrew and just homebrew things and kind of cobble things together. And then you're getting into game design right there.
Yeah. But yeah, like flipping through this blog that they have on Yield In. I mean, I think they're just generally posting a lot of stuff, but like there's all kinds of posts for like 3D terrain and all this. And essentially it is just a terrain dungeon crawler, but fixed to a board. But yeah, there's like tons of quests. There's like introductory quests. There's more complex ones. There's ones where I'm like, without a 3D printer, how would you even get all the models to do this?
That's kind of the hallmark of a lot of solo games, is like, how do you do this without a 3D printer?
Yeah. And like in your own imagination, there's a lot of ways to pull that off. But like,
yeah,
if you're sharing that experience with other people as a board game, it does help to actually have the stuff.
I'm just thinking like early, mid, late 90s, 80s even. You want to homebrew some miniatures. Like, how do you do that besides your 3D printing, right? You have to get plastic molds.
Sculpey. Yeah. That'd be the cheapest way to do it.
Yeah. You would just be doing some kit bashing and conversions the old-fashioned way.
Kit bashes, yep. Get that green stuff out and start smooshing things together.
Get a little piece of metal and like a little dental tool and start sculpting extremely detailed faces.
You know, people are committed enough to at least come up, like be able to make something. And often those are the people that later become sculptors, well, at least until 3D printing.
I mean, that's kind of the thing, though, about the gaming industry, is the best way to start in it is to be doing it already. And the best way to do it already is to homebrew.
Yeah.
Whether that's like making mods in Unreal, or it's more like, or it's taking your favorite board game or war game and hacking the hell out of it. That's the way to do it. Everyone that I know that's been successful hasn't necessarily done it because they have some secret educational formula. It's mostly just, oh, through the practice of experience, I have assembled the skills to do this now.
It's a folk tradition of sorts.
Weirdly enough.
Tabletop gaming especially. You can get some academic understanding of video games that can be very useful, but certainly. I find it's more along the lines of production, not so much design.
It's more about managing the circus than it is about like the theory of why it's fun or something.
Yeah, because most of the best games that I can think of are made by people who love games and love them so much that they want to make their own games. I mean, the entire history, and I don't want us to be thought of as like the Games Workshop like mouthpiece channel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's one reason why we want to move away from that stuff going, not going forward, but we're going to space it out a bit more, because there are definitely other YouTube channels and podcasts that focus on that, and they probably do a better job than we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all of those guys that started GW, there wasn't a school for that.
No.
I mean, some of them had an art education, some of them had a business education, but mostly they just played games and, you know, sold them out of the back of their van until they eventually afforded a studio.
And I think that's what's really cool about homebrewing in general, is that like you don't have to look at it as a path to anything. It can just be an exercise in its own right. But it is something that you can do to hone your skills if you want to, you know, make games. And for me, some of my favorite homebrewing is just like for solo gaming, you know, when I'm making my own unit profiles for a war game that I'm going to play. That to me is like so satisfying. Like if you think army list writing is fun, wait until you're writing your own unit profiles to then put into an army list. Ooh, there you go. That's the real game.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're working within levels, and it's all to whatever comfort level you like, but I don't even feel I need to promote this, because the people who are going to do it are just going to do it. You know, that's how I do it. Hopefully at some point, Troy and I will be able to put up some of the stuff that, you know, some adventures or something like that for other games. But
yeah,
that'll all be on our website when that's ready. And, you know, if you're out there in the world listening to us for whatever reason, if you like this stuff, then you should just do it. You know,
that's 100% it. And like the best experience is the doing of something, not the reading about how to be doing something.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That's something I'm super guilty of, is I'll get caught up in reading about how to start something as opposed to starting something. And in the process of doing, you will find what must be learned, as opposed to this process of trying to assemble a fact list beforehand. And then you've got it all and I can start clean now. Like there's no clean start.
Yeah.
You will just begin. And when you hit your first hurdles, you just have to leap them. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing else. It's a cool experience. You know, I my favorite homebrewing that I've done has been mostly war games related. RPGs to me have always been a little more intimidating because they're so open-ended. With war games, like you have a table that has boundaries and you have specific objectives. So it's much easier for me to wrap my head around like making content for that. But I think HeroQuest, to bring it back to that, not that it's like a war game by any means, but it is more constrained. So it makes more sense to make content for it because you're making dungeon layouts, so to speak.
Yeah. And the bar isn't so high that you can't do that. You almost are able to do your own homebrew role-playing element, but it's a little closer to the tabletop war game feeling.
Warhammer Quest has a lot more of that. Like between the missions, there's like an actual like roleplay booklet.
Right.
Which kind of explains like how you interact in town and how you could have the characters interact between each other. And it's a really cool little supplement. Like it's not really anything you need. You could easily just simplify it all the way down to how effectively the armory works in HeroQuest. But it's a neat notion for sure.
I honestly think that this is basically how the hobby propagates itself. You know, I wouldn't wait on, there's so much turmoil, especially lately within different companies, and where they're going with any one product, and are you going to like it, and is it worth the money? But like a lot of the time, sometimes those disappointments turn into new products. That's sort of the history of how you go from 3.5 to Pathfinder.
Yeah, that's a good example. Like out of 3.5 to 4th edition, created like tens to hundreds of games practically.
Yeah, there was a rift driven by the design of 4th edition. For whatever reason, it ruffled some feathers. And from that, we ended up with a whole bunch of other games. Like a lot of, I mean, OSR had existed before that because a lot of people had just not stopped playing 1st and 2nd edition. But it really gained a lot of traction because then it's like, oh, hey, maybe we could publish these old rules again, because 3rd edition had set the precedent of having these licenses where, you know, you don't need to, you can't copyright rules. If all any of you don't know that already, that's a thing. But basically they took off all of the elements that made it uniquely a TSR or Wizards product, and then they published it, and fair game, right? And that blew up partly because there were all those shifts happening at that time, and then by the time 5th edition came out, that was well rolled in. Like, you know, you had old school essentials, Dungeon Crawl Classics, which is more of its own sort of thing.
But you have Labyrinth Lord, right? That's another old school.
Yeah, but a lot of that comes out of the publishing of Osric.
Yep.
Which is old school role playing index. Oh, I forgot the last word. Codex? I don't know.
Index. Index. Appendage. Appendix N?
We'll get there. This podcast is not about being 100% accurate. It's about cueing you into things that are interesting, or we hope you find are interesting.
We're figuring it out. We'll get there.
Pardon us if we don't get every name right. But yeah, like that was basically just an AD&D reprint.
Yeah.
As soon as that gains some ground, then suddenly everything's happening, and then you end up with some really amazing companies like Melisonian Art Council, which mm-hmm. is one that I'm a big fan of. So they created it's such a crazy thing. They took Advanced Fighting Fantasy's rules and then turned it into a really, really crazy dreamlike fantasy sci-fi thing that is so stylish. And then recently they came out with another one called Sawyer, which is just being released. And the art in that one is amazing. If only for the sake of getting it as an art book, it would be worth the money. And see, that's what I'm talking about, is that like smaller companies can create these things that are much more carefully made and have things that have that art that's inspired by those sort of older companies when they were at their nascent state. They'll then turn that into a new product that has that love and attention put into it. I do appreciate that those entry points exist into this hobby, that things like HeroQuest exist. Maybe one of the reasons why it's, I wouldn't say it would cause any kind of explosion, but it definitely solidified a lot of people that may not have found their way into it, because role-playing is a very sort of arcane kind of experience, as we mentioned.
Agreed.
And miniatures gaming can be intimidating because you have to collect and build all of these things. But this one board game kind of gets you into both, because you're getting a role-playing experience. You understand the element of what a dungeon master does and how that actually feeds into the progress of the game. And essentially, you just take the board away. It's like taking away training wheels. And for miniatures games, well, the game comes with miniatures. And as I said, some people paint them. And that could be your first introduction to that. And then maybe you go out and you're buying your goblin army, or, you know, who knows where it'll take you.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, there's like tactical fighting in this game. It could introduce you to the concept of like having fun telling stories through fights. And that is pretty much what wargaming is about.
Yeah. And then from that point, you're off to all kinds of concepts.
Off to the races, man.
So yeah, I think we'll call it there. But yeah, it's been an interesting thing looking into this game. I think I learned a bit more of it than I was expecting. And I'm interested to see what other board games that we might get into. Because as I said, as I mentioned in the episode, we do mostly do role-playing games and war games because they have a lot of meat and sometimes a lot of history, but we definitely want to bring in board games and possibly even like more traditional games like card games. And I mean, doing a chess episode would be intimidating as all hell, but you know, that may be a multi-part special.
That'd be cool though. We got to do that.
We're big tabletop gamers just generally. So I wouldn't say anything is off the table. Pun somewhat intended. But yeah, thank you for listening, and we hope you tune in again for our next episode. See you then.